Hi, I'm Mike Sklenz, and this is Nintendo World Report's Connectivity Podcast, Episode 101, I Only Date Newborns. We've got three segments on the show for you this week. First, Scott grills Don on his hands-on time with the Nintendo 2DS. Then, Alex, Josh, and Danny go over the new Pokemon Direct news. And finally, Don sits down with indie developer Niflis for an interview. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. Today, I'm joined by Don Koopman.
Hello, hello.
Hello, and we're going to be talking all about the Nintendo 2DS. Not just speculation and our thoughts about it. Don actually got the chance to play it earlier this week.
Yes, I played the bloody thing.
You went to Nintendo and actually got to play it, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, I went to the local offices of Nintendo Benelux, the guys who do it for Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg, and I played it for... What is it, roughly 3.5 hours?
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. So the first thing I want to ask is just how it feels in your hands, because I know a lot of people were sort of, I don't know if shocked or kind of interested in the just the shape and the size of the thing. It's got the slanted back, it's kind of got the rounded top, that, you know, it doesn't fold shut anymore. So how did it feel actually holding it and playing it?
So... like, the first 30 minutes with it, it was like a bit of an awkward feeling for me because I didn't know how to hold it. You have this, like, you know how to hold a 3DS and a DS because you are so used to the clamshell design. So you're kind of in the mood with that. And going to this new design, it was actually kind of a weird thing. I had to, like, sit down and think about it a little. So... for the first 30 minutes, I struggled and filled about with a couple of new Super Mario Bros. 2 levels. And, I mean, it was not bad, but it's kind of like, is this the correct way? Is this the wrong way? But then you hold kind of your hands around it, and depending on how you want it, you can hold it on the shoulder buttons or on the bottom. It really depends on what you like. Mm-hmm. And... then you start kind of get in terms with it. You kind of seem to get what they're going for. It's just, if you see it in pictures, it seems a lot bigger. It's a very compact device.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at the pictures on the site, and like I don't know if you just have big hands or if it's just small, but it does look smaller.
Yes, from my pictures, you can easily tell that it's a small device, and it shows. I after that additional 30 minutes, it just clicked in my head. I knew what this is all about. And the buttons themselves, so the buttons you press for your usual means of control, worked actually quite nice. They were actually quite solid. The face buttons out to right are like a bit smaller than you're used to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it makes sense. They're made for... with a younger audience in mind. I mean, they're not bad. Even bigger hands like myself can get used to it over time. But it's something you have to realize that they are a bit on the smaller side, I guess.
Yeah.
And on the left side, like the circle pad and the D-pad are very close to one another.
I see that, yeah.
And at first I was like, I don't really get this. but you being so close to one another, it gives you the easy control of just switching between the two. It really makes it easy. And the circle pad is just the same as you would expect. It's still the same as like the 3DS and the 3DS XL.
Yeah.
With the D-pad, however, it seems a bit lesser loose. I don't know if you noticed with like the original 3DS and the 3DS XL, where if you use it too much, it becomes a bit on the looser side.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
This was a more... you more had to press it. You more had to... it was more of a sturdy feel. You really had to press it down. And it didn't have much room with movement. It didn't get loose all too often or way too quick. So that was actually kind of interesting. It was actually kind of different. And to be honest, at one half, I really liked it because I don't really like the looser bits of it. But at the same time, like, the looser opportunity makes it more, it allows for a softer push. So it really depends on what you like, actually. Well, there were both good and negative sides about it.
Sure.
I mean, it was felt pretty good in the end.
I'm looking at it now. I kind of like the placement of the start and select buttons. And that they're actual buttons rather than down, you know, at the bottom with the home button.
The thing is, I don't really like that placement. I felt that it was better suited at the bottom, but that's personally. That's very personal, I'll admit that.
Would you accidentally pause the game, or you just didn't like that?
No, I don't like that they were so close to the other control options. I would have rather had them at the bottom. But that's, again, that's a personal thing.
Yeah. And how about the shoulder buttons? Were you able to reach them nicely? I mean, did they feel okay?
Yeah, they feel really good. The shoulder buttons have an completely other feel to them because they're unlike anything like used on our other Nintendo DS handheld or 3DS handheld. When I reached for them, I directly thought of the original Game Boy Advance, which had these like curved buttons, and you really had more of like this clicky feel, where with the 3DS you really had to push them down. I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
They required like a harder push downward, but they were very comfortable to put your finger on. It's sometimes hard to tell if you push them fully down. It is can be a bit like awkward, but
mm-hmm.
to be really frank, I think they're really great. I think they are, most frankly, the biggest improvement over like the previous two versions of the 3DS. Because to be really honest, those shoulder buttons on the original 3DS could easily break.
Yeah, they could. I know a lot of people would, like, dust would get stuck in there, or like something would happen, and then yeah, they weren't responding or they were sticking. Yeah.
So actually, I like them much better. I think they are perfectly accurate and much more suited for a handheld.
Yeah. Well, good. It's interesting, too, looking at it and seeing your pictures, how everything's kind of shifted upward. You know, the buttons and stuff used to be around the bottom screen, and now they're kind of right in the middle, or even closer to the top screen, actually.
At first, this was also like a weird thing, because I was so used to having them on the bottom screen.
Mm-hmm.
But for the slate design, it actually kind of works. Because you are more focused. When are you using the button controls? You are using them for like action that is focused on the top screen,
right?
So having those buttons very close to it, it gives it more like a very up close feeling to it. And with no 3D there, it's not really a requirement to put your eyes in a certain position,
right?
Yeah. So there is some elements to it that just work and make sense.
Yeah, because I do agree with you. I think the buttons down near the bottom screen is sort of just a relic of the DS, because on the DS, everything used to be on the bottom screen.
Yes.
But now everything's moved to the top screen, and yeah, it seems to make more sense to kind of situate it closer to that top screen, especially when you can't fold the system at all.
Mm. Right. Another thing of interest then is when you are playing with the stylus. And this is very noticeable with games like Kid Icarus Uprising, which many, many people had control issues with. Except for Neil for some reason, but hey, there you go.
He loves it.
He loves it, and that's totally fine. I had control issues, and those are pretty legit, I think, as well. But playing it with the Nintendo 2DS, it actually worked better. Because with your left hand, you could hold like the circle pad and the shoulder button. And holding the system in such a way allowed your right hand to have full control over the touchscreen. And it was surprisingly comfortable. It didn't cramp your hands, or you didn't have to sit around like a lame ass standard that came with the packing of the entire thing.
Yeah, that thing was awful.
It was like the most useless thing ever, really.
Yeah.
And I personally think, thanks to this whole new setup, it works a lot better. And the clamshell design doesn't put you in the way of actual enjoyment of the game.
Well, yeah, like, I'm looking at your screenshot here of you actually playing Kid Icarus, and it looks so much more comfortable because your left hand is, like, perfectly on the circle pad and then really, like, cradling the whole system, so it's supporting a lot of the weight.
Yeah.
Which makes it easier to use your right hand to manipulate the touchscreen, whereas, yeah, on the original DS, 3DS, I should say, or the XL, I mean, you've got the top screen kind of, you've got that weight of the top screen, and it's just kind of harder to maneuver the whole thing with just your left hand, but this looks much more natural.
Yes, and that's another thing that of point of interest I want to bring up, because the weight in the whole system seems more balanced. With the
is it lighter than the XL? I mean, or is it close enough that you can't tell?
It's a bit lighter than the XL. It's in between the both systems. It's more heavier than the regular 3DS, but less heavier than the 3DS XL.
Okay.
But the weight is balanced in such a way that you barely notice a thing. It's way less noticeable than on the clamshell designs.
Right, where it's kind of heavier in the bottom, but if you kind of move it at all, the top screen kind of moves a little bit, you can feel the weight of the top screen sort of adjusting.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, it was a surprisingly comfortable thing, and at first, of course, many people will think, this is not for me. But actually playing it, it is interesting to see that I actually like it. I mean, playing through all of these games, so the games that I played are various and different. So I played Kid Icarus Uprising, which, again, felt comfortable. Then I played some Mario Tennis Open, and I played something with the gyro controls and a bit with the regular buttons.
Mm-hmm.
And I got pretty quick back into it. Moving the system a little bit for the gyroscope, it shows once again that the weight has been shifted to more have a balanced feeling.
Yeah.
So I had a little bit more time to angle my shots a bit more perfectly. Then I played a game that's purely focused on the top screen, which is a platformer like Sonic Generations, which I press the buttons really quick and just focus on the top screen. And having all those buttons very next to one another is actually a good thing in that fashion, because it requires a lot of fast movement in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And then I played also a round of Pretrip Saga. In particular, I played Flux, which is the final game of the Bitrip series.
Oh, okay.
Again, a similar thing with, like, Kid Icarus Uprising, holding the system in your left hand and using the stylus on the bottom screen to move your pedal back and forth. And all of these things, I felt I could do it a little bit better with that system. It's mm-hmm. not necessarily, like, the best experience, because the high-end experience is still with the 3DS XL. And it will get some of the problems in a little bit. But it's a very comparable system, and it doesn't do under for the other ones.
Sure.
And going to the final bit about it, really, I also tried a DS game with it, which is Kirby Mass Attack.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I had my regular 3DS with me as well, so that I could compare. And the settings on, like, playing DS games seems a bit nicer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Versus playing on the 3DS?
Yeah. I mean, on the 3DS, it's more comparable to the 3DS XL, where it's lesser awful than on the regular 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
Where it has more a brighter setting, and the colors of the games come more vibrant back to the screens.
Mm-hmm.
I had that kind of similar experience with, like, the 3DS. It could be because these screens are made of another sort of material, which don't use the 3D effects.
Right, it's a single screen. It's not that, like, you don't have two screens over each other to give you that effect.
Yeah, yeah. And this is also a weird thing, because Jeremy Parrish of US Gamer mentioned this already, but it's made of one sort of glass. So they only put some housing over it.
Yeah.
And you can kind of notice it because they only put some plastic over the top screen, so it's not touchable and you only see it. And the touch screen has this lesser lower edge to it, because with the 3DS XL and with the regular 3DS, you had this very specified edge around it.
You're right. It was like it was a raised edge.
Yeah. And this is with the 2DS, it seems lesser raised. So you could see that both screens were kind of on the same level. When you actually notice that, it's like, huh, this is a weird thing.
Yeah, well, I'm excited for it to get to people's hands and to see someone like on YouTube open it up, take it apart, and see what that screen looks like under there. Because you're right, it's just one screen with just plastic, making an artificial divider. So I'll be interested to see what it all looks like. But yeah, I want to ask too with the well, I guess two. Well, I guess still a few more things. The screens, are they comparable to the XL, or are they closer to the size of the regular 3DS?
They're closer to the size of the regular 3DS.
Okay. Are they bigger than the 3DS though? Or do you think it's about the same?
They're about the same.
Did they tell you anything about battery life? I mean, I know maybe with the smaller screens and with no 3D, maybe the battery would be, maybe this would have the best battery life of any of them,
They
but
couldn't really tell me because they just got it before the weekend, so they didn't have much time to toy around with it themselves. But so they couldn't really tell me that, really.
Sure. And then how did it sound? Because I know they switched to just one speaker. They say it's still stereo sound, but it's just one speaker now. Did it sound, I mean, fine?
Okay, so we go then to some of the lesser things about it. The sound quality is not bad. I mean, for a system that only has one speaker, it has a lot of volume to it. And I don't want to discredit that volume.
Well, because I actually think the XL is kind of quiet. I think it's quieter than the original 3DS. It could just be me, but I feel like the XL isn't very loud.
I mean that one speaker is like they still seem it seems like it sounds like a bit stereo in some fashion, but again, it comes from one side really. I mean, again, it's not bad. It's really not bad, but it's kind of more preferable that you have like a headphone plugged in to me. But it's not bad at all. Let me think. What other things I didn't really like? I mean, it's of course less portable now, which makes sense because you can buy this carrying case for it. I don't know what to think of it really.
Yeah, I saw the carrying case in the like the YouTube video that they showed. It looks okay, but yeah, you definitely can't just throw it in your pocket.
Yeah, it's I mean it's fine. It's still like a small device to carry around with you, especially in that carrying device with it, but it doesn't seem like a device that you would take along with you or for a long train ride. I can see it, but not for like a small commute or being going to work or something. I mean, I had more steady feel again with the more weight to it, and I feel that like when I have a long ride, this could be more like the better system, more like the backseat of the car system. But it's a tricky situation there. I mean, I don't know what the future will tell with this design and what people audience will take it for. Them, for all I know, I think people who just want to have like this more less cramped experience to them, they might buy a Nintendo 2DS as well. But having that small audience there, it's a tricky thing. But I think like both audience really benefit from it. It's not like this is only solely aimed to a smaller audience. They have made improvements there. They have made also some lesser things, which is of course the volume and making it in some fashions make it a less cheaper feeling, but in other fashions, like you have more control over your system. It feels a lot nicer. So
yeah.
it's a twofold. And it kind of depends what you actually want in a system.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a 3DS XL, I think that you won't be be bummed that you have it, because it's an excellent experience, and I think that,
sure.
that handheld is perfectly fine. If you still have an original 3DS, though, it might be something to look into. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's not perfect for, Street Pass. You still have to put it in, this sleep mode function.
Yeah.
With the toggle at the right of the bottom. And that works fine. It's a hard push, so it won't be easy to do. But it's kind of a weird thing.
Yeah.
And, of course, the interesting thing about, the notification light, since there's no more longer a clamshell design, it is now, this very small LED at the right side of the system.
Oh, okay, that's the notification. I think I see it in one of your screenshots here, in the bottom right corner?
At the top right corner.
Oh, the top right, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the power light at the bottom,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. The top right corner is there for Street Pass and Spot Pass now.
Okay.
Which is a weird thing, I can admit that, but it does its job being a notification light.
Sure.
Yeah.
It works.
So two things that I want to bring up, two things of note, is that the Wi-Fi switch is gone.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
so
true, yeah.
So you can't easily, toggle it on and off. The only way you can actually do that
is from the menu.
Is from a new setup in the menu on the top bar on the touch screen, where you push the wrench, and here you find still the brightness settings, but under it you can now turn the Wi-Fi on and off.
Oh, okay.
And Street Pass and that sort of functions if you are in an airplane or something.
Right, or just want to save your battery. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's no longer a switch there on the right side. Another thing is that the SD card slot no longer goes out of it. It now goes to the inside. It's like this flappy side where you just pull it in, then put the SD card in and pull it back out, and then fold it over the system again.
Okay, kind of like the Wii U's slot, on the front.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, yes.
Yeah, that covers all the USB ports and stuff. Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah, so there is some elements at the right side. The left side, there's still, of course, the volume button, which
mm-hmm.
I think is bloody terrible.
what kind of button? Is it just a slider?
It's a slider, but it's more engraved into the system.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to put your finger down to push it up or push it down.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of annoying. It's a bit of an annoying thing.
I wonder if they did that so you don't accidentally brush it with your hand and easily turn it up or down. I don't know.
Yeah, you kind of had that with the original 3DS, so I can see why that is, but it's...
Yeah.
It's a weird thing.
Yeah.
So... Let me think if there's anything else that I especially wanted to tell.
Sure.
So, the screens are still vibrant on the thing. I mean, I didn't have much of a difference there with the other two systems. I mean, they're not feel cheaper or any cutout or any way. They still feel like you can view them nicely, and it's still nice to watch, especially again with those DS games now, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it doesn't have the bloody glass design of the original 3DS anymore, so that's a whole lot better. because the entire thing is matte now, which is a bit more similar to the 3DS XL.
Right.
Which makes it more, interesting option if you also don't kind of want that glass design of the original 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
If you still want a cheaper model, maybe the 2DS is something to look into.
Yeah. Well, I know for me, if my daughter was, a couple years older, she's only 1.5 now, that I would definitely be into this. Because right now she'll grab my 3DS and she knows how to turn it on and everything, and she likes to On the home menu, she likes to swipe around and just move the icons around and stuff. She doesn't really play anything, but she just likes interacting with it.
Yeah.
But every time she picks it up, after she gets bored, she'll just, like, slam it closed and then, like, rip it back open. And I'm so afraid she's just going to, like, tear the top screen off or something. So if she was a few years older, I would definitely think about this for her. It seems sturdier for a kid. And I would definitely be interested in this.
Oh, definitely.
If I was ready to get her something like this.
And it still has, like, younger children, it still has all the built-in games from inside the box.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, AR games, which, why are the cameras still there?
Mm-hmm.
Not for the 3D pictures, like many people think. They are used to utilize that depth for the AR games.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, because that's kind of required. Mm-hmm. Face Raiders is still there. All of the inbuilt stuff is still there. So people will still have, like, stuff to do right from outside the box. And people who are completely new to that experience will have more to experience at the same time as well.
Yeah.
Which is a nice thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Well, I don't know. Do you have any closing thoughts or anything to leave off on? I mean, I don't know. You strike me as someone who's, like, maybe a little bit of a collector. So I could see you picking this up. Do you think you're going to get one?
That's a tricky situation. I mean, I'm not that kind of collector that likes to have too much of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's why one of the reasons I actually didn't buy a DSi XL.
Oh, okay.
I did buy the 3DS XL because I kind of regretted, like, the first time around.
Yeah.
With the 2DS, it's a weird thing. It's like not like something, again, I would take with me on long trips. Or maybe on long trips, but not like on short ones, like going to like an appointment or something.
Mm-hmm.
But having like that more the structured and weight feeling, I might use it a couple of games or for cartridge games and make it like a dedicated system for that end.
Yeah.
Because like I'm more recently into like purchasing like versions digitally.
Yeah, me too.
So having that side of it on for just basically just cartridge games would actually be a quite nice option.
Yeah. Well, like you said, it seems like it'd be something nice to have at like to play games at home. Like I could see having this, you know, like setting on my end table, and when I want to play my 3DS, I just grab this thing and just go.
Yeah, it's kind of like the same with the gamepad.
Sitting
at the table and playing games with it. Yeah. I kind of feel the same way about it, really.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm long trips, it will be fine. When I'm just at home playing games, I possibly just at the office, I would be a nice thing to have because you can still put it down and have this curved edge, which you can still look nicely upon.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would be interested in buying it. I mean, will I buy it at lunch? I don't know. It's coming out directly after my birthday,
so that helps.
So it's coming 4 days after my birthday.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I will perhaps buy it. It doesn't seem like a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if I will do, I don't know. It depends really on a couple of things, mostly money.
Yeah.
But it seems like a reasonable price, especially for people who got to step in and want to play some freaking Pokemon.
There you go.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Awesome. Well, great. Don, thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your thoughts about the
3DS. Thank you for being here.
Well, I am always here. if you weren't here, I'd just be recording and talking to myself.
Oh, come on. You wouldn't be.
That's true. I'd be, I don't know, playing something.
Rayman. You would be recording with Neil and Zach, who are lovely people as well. And congratulations on 100 episodes.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Don. I appreciate it. Thank you. You've been a part of a good number of them, so thank you for coming on. You're always good on Jeopardy. You're sort of our genius.
This kind of feels like episode 6, huh, all over again.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And we talked about that in episode 100, yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Oh, really? I still haven't listened to that, jeez.
Yeah, in the middle segment, we do a little, like, recap about disconnectivity as a whole, and I talk about that segment, because I like that one a lot, yeah, where we talked about Super Mario 3D.
Do you guys talk about Jeopardy?
We do, yeah. A little
because I always loved Jeopardy.
Yeah, you and Pedro were like the studs of Jeopardy. I don't know if we ever had you guys play against each other. I'm not sure.
I think that like the first time I was on, we actually played against one
another. Did you? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I need to play some Jeopardy again. I love Jeopardy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, next time we do a game, I'll definitely get you on. So yeah, you out there, the listener, if you have more questions or you're interested more about the 2DS, check out Don's impressions on Nintendo World Report.
And there's even more than impressions. There's like photos and video stuff as well.
Oh, awesome. So there you go. So there's a lot to check out. If your questions aren't answered here or in Dan's write-up, be sure to, I don't know, send him an email or ask him a question on Twitter or any other way.
The weirdest question I actually got about 2DS, this is a sort of off thing, is like, does it have a place for a lanyard?
Really?
Yeah. And I said, yeah.
And there you go.
Yeah. So that's the weirdest question of the internet answered. It does have a space for your lanyard.
Awesome. Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks, Don, for being here, and we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Hey everybody, Alex Kulafi here, and with me are two gentlemen to talk fresh off the presses with the new Pokemon Direct. These two people would be Joshua Max.
How's it going, guys?
And Danny Bivens.
I guess I'm a Pokemaniac now.
Oh yeah.
Welcome to the fold.
So we got three stories from this Pokemon Direct, all of them of varying levels of interest. And the first one, and perhaps the focus of the Pokemon Direct, is this new application called the Pokemon Bank. It is a cloud storage app for the 3DS that can store up to 100 boxes of Pokemon from X and Y. So basically, it was what that Pokemon box game on the GameCube did, but the new, improved 3DS version. There's also an add-on called Pokemon Transporter, which includes connectivity to the later DS game, so Black, White, Black 2, White 2. The cloud storage idea came from the development of Pokemon Crystal. Pokemon Bank requires an annual fee, except there is a trial period shortly after launch. Also, as far as I'm concerned, I think that this is not going to be there for the launch of X and Y. Mm-hmm. Tell me, Joshua, you seem like you would be the most interested in this. What do you take away from it?
To the cloud. Let's see. I'm excited because this is in our last podcast. I was saying, like, you know, I'll download digitally if it's like, you know, if I can still transfer Pokemon from one game to another. So if I can do that for free for, you know, the first month that comes out, I'm happy. Like, I don't know if I'm, you know, going to pay a monthly fee for this right now. I mean, maybe if I get, you know, that much more into it, but I'm only going to send, like, I don't know, like a handful of Pokemon through the generations that have been with me for a long time. So I'll probably, I'll definitely take place in the trial period. Like, why not? But,
well, yeah,
it's easier than any other transfer system that we've done before. So I'm very appreciative and excited about that.
So it's good that for the early adopters of X and Y, that they can get all their Pokemon transferred, presumably, assuming this Pokemon Transporter is free or extremely cheap. But what about the people who buy X and Y down the line and they still want to transfer their Pokemon? Is, from what I can tell, this thing basically makes it so for these later adopters, you cannot have every single Pokemon unless you pay extra money. And that is a little troubling to me.
Well, hold on. Any Pokemon master is going to go out and get this thing day one. And if you're not a true Pokemon master, you're going to get it day 3 or day 5 or, you know, I'm sure Pokemon understands that people get paid in weird intervals. So they're intervals? That's not a real word. In weird intervals. So they're going to probably keep this trial going for at least a month or so. And anyone who's, like, you know, that serious about the games where they have to, you know, transfer their Pokemon from game to game is probably going to get it in the first month or so.
Yeah, but the or so is the big part. Like, not everyone has the ability to get Pokemon on day one. Sometimes there are the kids who do love every single Pokemon game, but they don't have the ability to get the game until Christmas, which is 3 months later.
Right.
So they're completely fucked, especially if their parents do not let them use any kind of credit card on the eShop.
Okay, but, kids, who are listening?
Just to kind of clarify this a little bit, at least in Japan, and then from what I read in the North American press release, well, Pokemon Bank's coming out in Japan on Christmas Day, and the price is 500 yen, and that's for a year. That's like $5 a year. But for the first month, from January, or from, you know, December 25th until January 31st, it's going to be free. So, and then I was taking a look at the North American press release, and it said, you know, hey, more details about the software, including a free trial period, are going to come to the, you know, official Pokemon website in the near future. So it's going to happen worldwide. This is going to be free, you know, for a little bit of time. So, I mean, I don't think that's going to be a problem. If this is, you know, if this is coming out around Christmas, that is perfect, you know, for people, even kids that have to wait a little bit to get this.
You're absolutely right. For what they have to do, if they do have to charge an annual fee, releasing it on Christmas, and I presume they're going to do it the same day worldwide because they have to, it's the smartest thing they can do, and it's probably the nicest thing they could do for them and the people buying Pokemon X and Y. I still think there are going to be some people thrown under the bus because of this.
Hey, but you know what? We're not going to be of them. We're going to be people who are riding the bus with our pants off, doing a dance off.
Danny, you got anything else to take away from this?
I don't honestly see why this would come out any later, like in the other regions. Christmas, I mean, that's just, like I said, that's just the perfect time. It just doesn't make any sense for it to come out any other time. And yeah, $5, you know, €5, whatever the hell they're going to price it in the UK. I mean, it, you know, or even down under, who knows, $20 in Australia. yeah, those poor guys. But, yeah.
Okay. Next up, we have a two-part news story, specifically built for the nostalgia junkies among us, is that while one of your friends will give you the three starters from Pokemon X and Y, one of the three, the professor will actually be giving you a Kanto starter, which I presume is at the beginning of the game, which is Charmander, Bulbasaur, Squirtle. In addition to this, these guys Mega Evolve into Mega Charizard, Mega Venusaur, Mega Blastoise. Mega Blastoise has two cannons on his arm and one cannon on his back. Venusaur kind of just has a flower on his forehead and looks a little older. And Charizard looks like a dragon. Josh, again, for this story, this one looks like it's built for you.
Yes, it is. So, okay, first of all, I just remembered something that I have to clear something up. In our last segment together, we said that it came out on October 11th on my birthday.
October 12th.
October 12th is the day after my birthday. So, yeah, so that makes me sad.
You know, I thought that, but I was thinking, well, you guys know more about Pokemon than me.
I guess not, Danny.
Yeah, I guess I'm the real Pokemon master. No.
Guys, it's okay. I'm obviously very excited about this. I'm excited in more than one way, and if this podcast were visual, I would show you all how inappropriate I can be. I am totally aroused at the thought of having more than one starter at the beginning of the game, but I'm even more aroused by the fact that I can now have Blastoise Mega Evolve. And that it's just, I'm shaking. I mean, you can't see this, but my hand is like shaking. I'm so excited about this. You get two starters and you get like, I'm going to get the best of both worlds.
Josh, let me tell you why I'm not even at half mast for this announcement.
You don't even have half a stack?
Not even halfway. So let me tell you what the story on this is. You know how in Black and White they had the three monkeys that basically made it so you could get a type of starter Pokemon and then the opposite type so the game would be a little easier? this is their version of that. This is their, oh, we need some sort of natural easy mode for the player. And I guess for some people it's exciting to get old starters, which they have done in every single game. And the only difference is that now they can mega evolve, which, okay. And they
shut up. Like, you're not also at the, like, you're not the into the mega evolution.
They look like fucking Digimon, Josh.
I know. Look like fucking Digimon. I have no problem with that. Best of both worlds.
Danny, give me something interesting to talk about.
Yeah, I like old Pokemon. I think it's kind of interesting that they're doing this. I mean, because I have more of a connection to these Pokemon than anything else. So, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I wish it was the other way around. I kind of wish that it was some little side Pokemon you could get at the beginning of the game from your friend instead of, like, allegedly a main Pokemon that you're getting from the professor. I know it's all a matter of context, but it just shows a little disrespect to the new starters, I think.
Well, hey.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
So, Pokemon's just doing its best, man. They're trying to mix it up. Like, you know, you don't need to get your Pokemon from the professor every time. They're just trying to keep it edgy and hip and cool, man. Yeah.
But they're prioritizing the value. That's what it feels like.
You're not wrong. Like, it does feel a little cheap in that you're, you know, I assume your best friend's an asshole, because if he's not an asshole, he's not a best friend. So you get the starter Pokemon from an asshole, and then you get the original three from the professor. So it's like, I don't know, that does kind of feel like prioritizing that, like, you know, you might value one higher than the other. Kanto. I'm just saying, man. Blastoise is tried and true as the best Pokemon ever, so Fennekin's gonna have to work pretty hard for this.
Blastoise, as far as I'm concerned, isn't even in, like, one of the lower tiers, like, in tournament brackets.
Hey.
It might be in the very bottom tier.
Hey.
It might be the Ganondorf of the Pokemon world.
You shut your mouth. That's not even true. You shut your mouth. He's always going to be a Seafalk.
So the Mega Evolution, this stuff is pretty cool. Venusaur kind of looks like shit. It looks closer to a dinosaur, which I guess is interesting. Charizard looks kind of cool. It looks more like a dragon, though I wish it was dragon type. Mm-hmm. And Blastoise is, I definitely agree, the coolest looking one with three cannons instead of two. But, like, biologically speaking, I feel like two cannons on its back might be more efficient in battle.
Hold up. You're wrong, and here's why.
Okay.
So, he can now punch someone, and then while punching, the little, I wish that you could see what I'm trying to explain, but
I get
as,
it.
Yes, as Keep he punches, going. He gets that hydro pump going, and then he's like, oh, wait, hold up, there's somebody right in front of me, and I need to shoot them in the face. Giant cannon.
Think of the recoil on that, though.
Yeah, but also remember, he's Blastoise, so he's essentially magic.
I was going to say, speaking of biologically, I mean, how the hell does a turtle even get, you know, guns in his shell?
Metal guns. They're not made out of bone.
Yo, if they're made out of bone, then my mind is blown, and that is amazing. He's like Wolverine, but with cannons.
I guess so. I guess all of them are like, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Who are we to question the genius of Pokemon?
I think there's a lot of things that can be questioned about the genius of Pokemon.
Nope, you shut up. Nope.
So the last story today, which is, in my opinion, the least interesting, but maybe also interesting in its own way, is that the red and blue Nintendo 3DS XLs have been announced for North America and in Europe, which is uninteresting because this was going to happen to begin with. They feature Xerneas and Yveltal on them, both of them, except one's blue and one's red. And because it releases on September 27th, I don't know if this is news, but the games aren't included.
They aren't included?
Yeah, they are not included.
Yeah, that's what I was... Yeah, for a second I thought you muttered at something, and I'm like, what? Wait, do I need to get running right now to Best Buy?
No. They're not going to release the game 2 weeks early just as part of a bundle, Josh.
Hey, man, I don't question Pokemon, all right? I just accept and build.
So I'm guessing this isn't, like, of much interest to you, Danny?
No, actually, I just... Coincidentally, I just bought a North American 3DS XL, like, last week. So, I mean, that's fine. I wanted one just for stuff for the site and just to, you know, play a bunch of downloadable stuff that hasn't come out here in Japan. But no, and actually, too, I believe pre-orders have already started for two of the XLs here in Japan. I think one is almost the same. And then there's like a blue one and a gold one. I'm kind of fuzzy on the details, and I just looked at it like literally 15 minutes ago, and I still don't remember.
Yeah.
But I think it's like Pokemon Center exclusive bullshit or something like that, where it's just, that's fucking stupid. But
yeah, I feel like you can describe almost everything about the Pokemon Center in that way.
Oh, God, man. Don't even get me started.
I want you to get started. We're only like 13 minutes through. I want to hear your Pokemon Center rant.
I mean, you know, okay. The first thing that really gets me is, well, you know, back when Pokemon Rumble U came out in Japan, like the characters, the NFC characters, are only available at, I guess, essentially like, you know, little coin machines at the Pokemon Center, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean,
also, before you continue, we should note that Pokemon Center is basically their Nintendo World store in Japan. It has a bunch of Pokemon stuff in it that you can buy. Yeah, that's
you
it.
You know, Nintendo World store used to be the Pokemon Center in New York.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've never been to either. I've never been to the Pokemon Center anywhere. I've never been to the Nintendo World store in New York from Illinois, so... Boom. But no, and then
self
just like
boom. All right.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think when the Pika Nip 3DS XL came out last year, and, you know, it was the same thing. It's just like, hey, let's just make this exclusive in the Pokemon Center. It's just, man, come on, have a heart. But I guess that's about it, really. It's not that big of a rant.
Okay. Josh, are you buying this?
All right. Well, let me break this down for you guys. So September 27th rolls around. I wake up, bushy-tailed, bright-eyed. I'm ready to go. I run down to my local Best Buy. I didn't put down a reservation. I expect it to just be there. And then I pick it up, and I finally have this 3DS XL. But I don't play it. I keep it in its box. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take it out with me. I'm going to go out on a date with it. I'm going to show it a good time. We're going to color in some coloring books. We're going to go on a Ferris wheel together.
How old is your date? Wine.
What?
How old is your date supposed to be?
Probably 0 days old.
Yeah,
this.
She's brand new, baby. Like, okay. I haven't even opened the box yet.
It's, okay.
His 3DS is essentially a fetus.
Yeah, well, not a fetus. It's a newborn. Let's
it's
call it what
fetus.
It is.
Okay.
It's a
fetus. Okay. You haven't opened it yet.
Listen, I don't date fetuses, all right? I date newborns.
Okay, well, I'm glad you
shut your
that
mouth.
Off.
You shut your mouth. Hey, well, excuse me. Excuse me. I prefer the term alcoholic, but let's move on. So this got weird. I'm not gonna buy it. I don't usually buy any like new like version exclusive kind of things, or that doesn't make sense. I don't buy any of the special edition things. The only special edition thing I bought was a Skyward Sword Motion Plus Wiimote, because that was so cool. But I don't really care about this at all. I wish I could, but I'm not rich. I pay rent.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you think about it, I'm looking at this on Cerebi right now, and it is basically the red 3DS XL and the blue 3DS XL, but they etched something into it.
I mean, that's cool. What this
is. It's not $200 cool, to me, at least.
In all honesty, I'd sooner buy a Fire Emblem 3DS XL.
That one looks like it has a little more work put into it.
Yeah, and plus, you know, I love Fire Emblem right now. I mean, I always do, but Awakening is like, it's reached like gold and silver status in my mind.
I'll say, you know, actually speaking of Fire Emblem Awakening, that is the first game I bought for my North American 3DS. And
you're doing it right. You're doing it right.
But I still haven't played it, and I got it on Saturday, and it's Wednesday.
I don't care, right. You got it. Like, you can do it, like, wait a month. I don't give a shit. As long as you play it, it's amazing. I could not have reviewed this game for the site because I would have given it an 11 out of 10 and broken the site.
All right. So I think we should give this a standard conclusion and ask both of you guys, starting with you, Danny, final thoughts?
Pokemon Box. Not box, Pokemon Bank. I think it's a cool idea, and I think, you know, it can be something that's pretty useful for people, especially, you know, with the transport thing where you can transfer all your old crap. It doesn't mean shit to me because I don't have any old Pokemon games that support it, but I know there's tons of people out there, and, you know, for the free month or whatever, that's awesome. That's great.
Anything else on the other stuff?
Bleh.
Josh, what do you have to say?
Box, cool. Gonna use it for free, and then I'm never gonna see it again. Excited about doing Fennekin and Squirtle. I think it's gonna be an awesome tag team. They're gonna be best friends. I'm already thinking up cool nicknames for both of them, because I'm that guy. And I'm never gonna buy a special edition 3DS unless somebody gives it to me for free.
All right. So I guess for my part of this, this is probably gonna spawn into something a little more. But I was really bummed out by this Nintendo Direct, and let me tell you why. This news is cool for a press release. This news is cool stuff to report on the site, or something just casually released. But what they did was, they hyped this up the day before, they made it for the middle of the day while people are at work in Europe, at the beginning of the day so people have to set their alarms in America, and at night right before people are going to bed in Japan.
Actually, it was
which
like
is the, fine.
It was like the perfect time in Japan, like 8 o'clock at night.
It's fine if the news is there to support it, and there was a couple cool announcements. But all we really got for maybe tuning in at work or setting our alarm for 7 a.m. or even 4 a.m. is a paid cloud application.
To the cloud.
More Mega Evolutions and a feature that has been in previous games before, getting old starters. And also the most obvious announcement they could have been. There was no surprise 3D trailer at the end. There was no crazy awesome demo. There was no Pokken Fighters announcement. All we got were three really basic stories. And you know what? The 3DS and the three starters, that sounds like something they stuffed into the Direct to make it more interesting. And it seems really inconsiderate, and I'm really kind of upset at Nintendo for making a full Direct out of this.
Yeah, I know, because right before the Direct happened, maybe 30 minutes before, I was like, hey, this thing's going to be 20 minutes long. That's great. Because usually it seems to me if there's anything of like any substance, it's going to usually be like 35, 40 minutes.
The so. X and Y announcement was 8 minutes.
Well, there goes my theory.
Keep going, Danny.
That's it. That's all I got. Aww. I'm out of gas.
So are we just going to end this on a bummer note, Josh?
Hey, guys, this is what I got to say. If you're not aroused by the sounds of our voices talking about Pokemon, you're doing something wrong with your life. So get up, get yourself a cup of coffee if it's the morning, get yourself a sandwich for the afternoon, or some tea in the evening. Cuddle up in bed and love us, because someone has to.
Okay. But the Direct was still pretty shit, though. Alright, so that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining me, Danny and Josh.
Yeah, no problem.
You have been listening to the official Nintendo World Report Connectivity Pokemon Crew. Woo. See you later, guys.
Woo. Later. Woo.
Yet another interview for an upcoming eShop game, and I'm here with Nicholas.
Hey,
how are you doing?
I'm quite good. How are you?
I am good. So it is quite warm today. It's roughly 30 degrees Celsius here, so it barely feels like the correct timing to do an interview, but I'm just pushing the punches and doing it anyway.
Right. Sounds great.
Yeah. So could you give like a proper introduction of yourself and what you do?
I make indie games. Usually I've been working in like on my own in very small teams of like friends and stuff. And somehow I managed to make a living off it, which is very weird.
Yes. You've worked on a variety of games, including some even some freeware and some like a variety of other places. Could you give me like an overview of some of your favorite projects, really?
I guess it's very hard to pick favorites. I like different games for different reasons. My latest game, Knut Underground, is probably my most personal game in many ways. But I also really like Night Sky for like all the puzzly stuff that the game has, and like the physics. Or I really like the first Knut game just for the very empty world with like not much going on and like that minimalism. So it's different things, I guess, in different games.
So it's not like that you have a favorite, it's just like you like different games that you make for different reasons and they all feel like on the similar level.
I would say that.
Yes. So, it's
almost accurate. I'm not sure how to put it better.
Which is fair enough. So people on Nintendo platforms might remember like in the 3DS eShop game, which you just mentioned, is Night Sky. This game was released, I think, in 2012? Yes.
Sounds about right.
This game was like a physics-based platformer, and it was one of those titles that I actually really enjoyed playing.
Thank you.
No problem. So, like, Night Sky had a long development history behind it, right?
Yeah, it was a bit complicated, but it all worked out very nicely in the end.
Yeah, so I think it started like as like a PC game, and then it came also was going to WiiWare, but then it wasn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then it came to PC, which I think I played also back then on PC. I can't remember it not correctly. I think I did, and then I played it again on the go on my 3DS, which looked lovely in 3D. By the way, it was a really lovely game. What I enjoyed personally about that game is how the screens were separated yet connected. It always made you wonder about what is next. And it played like really well in your senses because it was this really abstract world. Yeah. Was that something you found really important to bring to the table? Or was there another reason you wanted to toy with like the elements of that game?
It's actually kind of silly. I didn't really have a lot of ideas. It was just like, I would say Night Sky started out as some physics experiment that just escalated. I wanted to learn to do physics stuff and started to, like, I've always liked marble games, like Marble Madness and stuff like that, and always wanted to make an isometric one. But back then, I didn't know how to do anything in a 3D platform, so I wanted to test, just for fun, the concept in 2D and just learned about like how to make a marble roll and built some levels and added some objects. And I guess it just kind of got bigger and bigger until I realized it was my next big game.
Yeah, I think originally you were on a completely different physics engine, and then you moved it to a completely different one during the development, really. So
it's not for the PC development. Maybe it was based on. I can't remember if it was based on Box2D first, and then we switched to Chipmunk because it was. I can't remember all the details.
That's fine. That's completely fine. Yeah. So it was a game for me like really worth remembering because that style. So the style like became like was an afterthought, and you first thought of the gameplay ideas first in your head, which I guess took like a really long time to do, or was it like you first turned around with it and then it became this big thing from yeah, this is something I should complete.
I think the original plan when I started to see that this would be a quite fun game was I was also in contact with Asthmatic Kitty Records at the same time, who wanted me to make a game with one of their musicians, and I had got in touch with Chris Larb. Our idea was only to make a smaller game with like three worlds or something like that. And then I think when Nicalis got involved and wanted to bring the game to more consoles, that's when I started to like consider maybe this could be a much bigger game. Maybe there's much more mechanics to explore with physics.
And then at Endly, it became Night Sky, which we now know and all in love.
Yeah.
Really. So as we move into like Knit Underground, this is not the first game you have released under the Knit name.
No.
How does this all start out, and what made you actually like decide to revisit these games?
Trying to remember, it kind of happened slowly. I think I wanted to go back to just create a very non-linear huge world, which could be open, which could be explored freely. So it just started out as like a huge level design project. I think it even started out just as this experiment. I wanted to see what would happen if you could morph at any time between the character from the Knit game and the character from the Within a Deep Forest game. And that turned out to be a mechanic that I really liked and wanted to keep building on.
Yeah, so the thing is about like Knit Underground is that in the first chapter you get like introduced to a character called Mies Brocket. And then in the second chapter, you get introduced to like a character called Bob, which both have their differences. So in like the first two chapters, you play them separately. So how do you progress then through those first two chapters? What do you learn, and how similar were they to like the initial games that they were based on?
They're a bit similar. Like I would say, chapter one is very close to maybe the first more linear adventure in Knit Stories, where the second chapter is a lot like Within a Deep Forest, but more linear.
Yes.
And I guess the reason for the linear level designs of the first two chapters is because I want to ensure that the player gets like all the mechanics before like I open the entire world where they can like... just to make sure they don't get stuck and there's something they don't know. Because in chapter 3, the player may just go anywhere, and then I cannot control the progression of when they learn anything anymore.
Yes, because I actually wanted to bring up chapter 3. In chapter 3, you bring those two characters together, and then the game opens up in like a very interesting way. I don't know if we want to spoil like too much, because we are like telling this to people who have not played the game yet. But what makes like chapter 3 look like so inherently different from like the first two, and where will it take people really?
First, of course, it's the size of it. Chapter 3 is bigger than chapter 1 and 2. I mean, lot bigger.
Yeah.
And also it's more, I guess, more story elements are introduced, and the game kind of tries to dig into the quirky story, which is told in a very fragmented way about the world and the people who live there.
And this, like the background of the game is also kind of interesting, because it's based on your past and the way that you were raised religiously, I believe.
And
since then you formed like your own beliefs, and in it underground, you try to make, I believe, make sense of the world.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your feelings on this a bit more?
Basically I'm raised in a religious family, like not a crazy one.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
But church was still pretty bad quite often. Like, it's not very nice believing in this thing that we're right about something and everybody else who doesn't know what we know go to hell, and like weird things like that. And it's like a lot of talk about like everybody's equal value when they at the same time held very like conservative beliefs about stuff like that in church. Mm-hmm. And but the weird contrast between like picking like my whole belief system apart and ending up where I am now as an atheist. Problem is, I'm super scared of dying and like things that back then I was completely okay with. So suddenly I have like new fears and like have to process all that stuff too. And I kind of wanted to make a game about. I wanted to make it kind of a metaphor for like how I guess we all try to make sense out of the world, mm-hmm. and how everybody sort of comes to different conclusions and stuff like that.
Yes, it is. It's kind of true for life. Everybody comes to an all different conclusion. So, do you feel like people have a different takeaway from the game in that respect? When they look back at the game and see from, well, this is how I view upon it?
I mean, I've heard people who interpret the stuff very differently. Like, some people would think I'm taking a standpoint to, like, either one of the sides. Some Christians have responded to me, like, seeing Christian values in it, but while some other people really think I'm, like, just very super negative to all of it. And I guess that's a point also, like if it makes people think, but like if I don't tell any answers but just ask the questions that I'm asking myself, if that makes sense.
Yes, so try and make it work for yourself gives you answers from outside who actually have played the game and maybe gives you a different perspective on it, which is sort of interesting in its own right.
It's definitely interesting, but I guess the only thing, if I somehow made a game to look for answers, that didn't work.
Like, yes, I'm yes.
Probably even more confused now than I was before.
True. But it's kind of both, I guess, in that sense, I reckon. Yeah. So what I also like about the game, and I've looked like for a good while at it, it's like the game has a very fresh and lush look to it.
Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. Where did you get your inspiration from, and what made you actually go in that direction?
It's a good question. Usually I find like with visuals, the inspiration can be from very sudden stuff, just from things I see, like pictures I like or some colors that I see when I'm out in some forest. It's for the visuals, it's so many things. The reason why it's based on photographs is because I really prefer going outside and finding a tree to capture than sitting in front of my computer and drawing a tree when like the rest of the game development is in front of the computer almost.
True.
So that's the reason for the photographing. But with visual inspirations, it's a lot of small things rather than like anything really big I can point at.
Fair enough. So the game is going to be released by Ripstone. And it was also released before on PlayStation platforms and dev for also on PC by your own, I believe?
Yeah, there's Windows, Mac, and Linux builds, and they're going to make it out on Steam soon.
Oh, that's very great. So the game is also now coming to Wii U. Is there any way that these versions like differ from before? And if there's any way that they differ, how do they?
I guess mainly what's new for the Wii U version is that there's this update of the game where we put in more content and more like extra stories, which is called the Infinity Hype update, and all the content from that is making it into the Wii U release.
That's great. So this is also coming to the other platforms, I reckon, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah, so roughly at the same time, we might be seeing also like the Wii U release, although that's still like up in the air, really.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm not exactly 100% sure of all the plans, because I think Ripstone is managing most of those, but...
Which is...
So I can't say 100% when things will happen.
Hey, I can always ask them. So, your next game is coming to Wii U, and it's actually revealed in an interview we did with Knapnack Games like a little while ago, which are also lovely people. What made you decide to work with them?
Basically the reason why I moved to Denmark was because I met these people at the Game Jam, and we just really liked each other and had lots of fun, and play games and stuff. And even though we haven't made games together until now, I've been sitting a lot and working at the Knapnack office. And I guess we're just really good friends, and I like their crazy hardware-specific games, and they like my games, and it just made a lot of sense to work together.
So, is there any way that you like can give us a teaser of what you're going to do? I mean, it doesn't really have to be specific, because I know that there were like screenshots promised by the end of the year, I believe, in the last interview we did. But I'm really just excited to learn more, really.
Figure out how I should put it. I shouldn't reveal too much without Knapnack's permission. But so the reason it's for the Wii U is actually when I heard about the Wii U for the first time, the fact that it would have a separate touchscreen with a built-in controller, I got quite excited, because there's... you know the old game Steel Battalion for, I think it's the first Xbox?
Yes.
It came with this huge controller that's...
Oh yeah, that was a really expensive controller.
Yeah, so it's just designed for that specific game, and I guess it's kind of tricky to... sell something like that, since you need to sell the hardware. But the game essentially wouldn't be possible to play without like having all these buttons and stuff. I guess what the Wii U did by having a separate touchscreen and a controller at the same time was that it opened up for a new, like, I would say that kind of games where you can have a more advanced control system and menu and like control a complicated device at the same time as not pausing the game.
Yes.
And like not have to clutter up what's happening in the game with a lot of like elements that pop up in the way on the screen. And so I started to think about what kind of games would be really excellent with this kind of hardware, and what would work specifically really well for the Wii U. And then I came up with this idea.
Okay. So that's kind of your tease. So you are thinking of more using like advanced control styles that the Wii U gamepad makes possible in your own favor, really.
Yeah.
You're making me more interested now. That's a very good tease there. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm kind of super interested now. What made you actually kind of interested in working on Nintendo systems? Because, again, Night Sky was originally a WiiWare game, then it came to 3DS. Knit Underground is now coming to Wii U, and your next game is coming to Wii U. What makes you, like, then actually interested in Nintendo systems?
The funny thing is that most of it happened a little bit by... when it comes to the Wii U, the 3DS thing, that was like an initiative taken by Tyrone at Nicalis.
Okay.
And the initiative to get Knut Underground out on the Wii U was taken by Ripstone. So to me, in both of these cases, it was more like publishers being like, hey, do you want to bring it to this console? And I'm just like, yeah, why not?
Yeah, yeah.
So I wouldn't say I've taken a strong personal interest. Like, until now, it has been more just opportunities that I would gladly take. But for this game, I would say it's the first time I'm specifically interested in a certain console, and that's just because the unique controller.
Mm-hmm. So it was maybe it's more that because the interest shift because of these publishers that you're like that you have taken like an interest in the Wii U and say, okay, now I see this controller, maybe we should do something with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is formed a certain interest there, but it's only just growing you with this new game, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I'm always happy to get games out on consoles. Like, that's always really cool stuff. So.
Yeah. There's always fun to be had there.
Yeah.
So finally, and this is something that we always do, is that we give developers like a chance to pitch their game in like a minute. So I don't know how you want to take it, but you have like 60 seconds to talk to our audience directly and say why they should be interested in Knut Underground.
No, so I would say you should play Knut Underground because it's like, it's, if you like exploring a really, really huge world that's like full of variety and like lots of music and stuff, you should definitely do it because like it's bigger than you think. And has a very weird, quirky story where I try to figure out the meaning of life and fail.
So okay. That's a quite quick description in 30 seconds. I'll take that. then all that rests me is to thank you for being on this interview.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you for doing the interview stuff.
No problem.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget, you can send your listener mail questions to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and please rate and review the show on iTunes if you've got a moment.